Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score! Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
Maybe I'm in this sort of state of denial or defiance. I just don't like that reality when it comes to trading a player like Chris Bryant, who has been through some difficult times. And I think it's been more related to health than anything else. And I do think that, you know, maybe I'm buying into this small sample size of the 2021 season already and thinking, okay, he's back to being the player he was before, because I get kind of encouraged and maybe a tad bit excited when I read about, you know, great story by Tom Verducci and SI.com about the adjustments that Chris Bryant made this offseason, the commitment to having to change his swing so he no longer is the launch angle example and the guy that is trying to swing down on the baseball and making these subtle adjustments. And I wouldn't buy into it if it wasn't so obvious that it's working.
The Verducci story was fantastic, and it really was very insightful. If you look at Chris Bryant and the way he's performing right now, he's back to MVP Chris Bryant. He's back to performing how you thought a player of his quality should be performing all along. And that changes the story in terms of his value. It might not change the story in terms of where the Cubs are at. They seem to have reached a decision on this. I think you're calling for them to kind of reflect on that and go back to square one with it. But he's had an unbelievable year. This is how he should have been playing all along. And I agree with you. I think it's injury related. I think there are other factors involved. But if he had been playing like this all along, I mean, wouldn't he be locked down?
Mike Mulligan and David Hall taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh my goodness gracious, so much to talk about, so much controversy, if you will, Mr. David, in yesterday's Sox game. How about the Cubs? Cubs with the sweep. Should we start with the sweep, or do we have to start with the horror?
Well, I don't know. That's the good news, right? Happy Thursday, May 5th. I wonder, as I was driving in the studio this morning, I wonder if we will look back with both teams at May 5th as a pivotal day in their season because of different reasons, perhaps, because the Cubs sweep the defending World Series champions. You beat Kershaw. You beat Bauer. You beat Buehler. 1-2-3, you get a sweep of the Dodgers. That hasn't happened in a long time. And then, obviously, the White Sox. You wonder where that whole show is headed.
Oh, boy.
What direction they are going in. And there is a lot to discuss. Yeah, there's, you know, we
sometimes, David, there's a curse word in front of show.
Yes.
I'm
yes,
just saying.
There could
so
be.
When you say show, I hear show.
We've got plenty to get to, but I think the Cubs is more recent. It ended. This is like the extended post-game show, right? Didn't Zach just get done telling us about the highlights?
I mean, it's just insane how late that game went.
I know.
as I sat there watching it, they're getting to the 10th inning stuff, and I'm like, I got to go to bed. I'm downtown tomorrow. I got a big day. It's my anniversary, for God's sake. I've got to celebrate my happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Great.
Can you believe it? Yeah.
Man, May 6th.
I got a woman to marry me. Hard to believe. Awesome. It was Derby Day. I think I told you that.
I know the story. Yeah. That's a great story, though.
That's a happy story.
We're telling every year.
Fun thing that I always mention to my children, and they look at me blankly. But they look at me blankly most times. But I'm just trying to get away from that White Sox story.
Yeah,
that was awful, David. I don't know that it was a heartbreaker, but it was a heart confuser. It was a mind breaker. It didn't make any sense. The stuff that happened in the post game and even watching the thing unfold, it was like, my God, this 10th inning rule is like the worst rule known to humanity. I've always felt that way. It really is a kind of a crazy, stupid rule. But when you have to have your $54 million closer running the bases, that Major League Baseball needs to rethink this. And apparently they had.
They have. And I understand why people will come back at us and say, well, you know, did you know the rule? Did you know that going in? And maybe not.
Not a manager.
But you're a manager, and at what point does the alarm go off in your head when you have your $54 million closer taking second base in an extra inning game, and don't you have to start asking around, is this right? Wait, don't we have something? Isn't there a loophole we can avoid this? Isn't there some reason why we don't have to do this? And there was, except for most people in the game understood that, knew that, but not the White Sox bench, apparently.
Yeah, and apparently, and I'm glad you said the bench, because it's not just one guy. I mean, among the group, you are playing interleague play. I mean, someone needs to read the rule book. And I was thinking about it. It just popped in my mind immediately. I don't know if you saw the story earlier in the week that Ernie Adams is retiring.
Yes.
Ernie Adams is, of course, he's like the rules whisperer to Bill Belichick. He and Bill Belichick went to high school together, known each other forever, and Ernie Adams ended up making a ton of money in the markets and all that, and then he became Bill's, like, hotline answerer. He's a guy that is in the stadium, up in the skybox. There's a special phone. Bill talks to him, and he is the guy that does all this weird research, and he's the guy that knows the rule book inside and out. Whenever you see the New England Patriots do something where you're like, that can't be right. Oh, no, it's right because Ernie's read the rule book. Where the hell is Tony's Ernie? And now that the guy's retired, should Ernie be Tony's Ernie?
Who is your baseball concierge?
Thank you.
You know, you need somebody like that that you hire to take care of all of the details, to know, you know, where to go in this clubhouse, where to go in this ballpark, where to go wherever. I know this sounds like you're asking a lot, but that baseball teams, professional sports teams, professional organizations, everyone has that guy.
Yeah.
Who is that guy with the White Sox? Because you know what? We can sit here today and we will tear apart, pick apart Tony La Russa's decision-making process.
Jeez.
But it's an organizational failure, what they have put him through. Especially yesterday, where it was underscored and magnified that the whole White Sox organization, this was a fail from the top on down, okay? Because it's not just on Tony La Russa to figure this out. What are these bench coaches, one of the biggest coaching staffs in all of MLB, what are they doing, and why don't they know? And I just think that at some point in time, that's got to be a collective effort, whether you win or, in the case of yesterday, whether you lose for the reasons you lost.
You should never have your manager sitting in a Zoom conference with a reporter reading to him the rule book.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that was just – and Tony saying, like, oh, well, you know the rules better than I do. I mean, I got to tell you, that was so painful to – it was painful to watch that game for a number of different reasons, but – you know, the failure to score, the failure to get any offense going. It was a real pitcher's duel, and I thought Dallas Keuchel really held up his end of the bargain because he was kind of scuffling, and they got out of two bad situations with double plays. So yes, the White Sox defense actually showed up, which is fantastic. But then to get to the 10th inning, to get to the 9th inning and to make a double switch, and then everybody kind of, wait, does that mean that the pitcher, well, he's the guy in that spot? Well, not according to the rule book.
Two things there. You mentioned the post game, which we will listen to later, because I think you have to hear it to understand the whole gravity of this and just how out of touch and how bad the optics were. But they never should have gotten to that point. When I talk about an organizational breakdown, that's where, okay, you need to hire somebody that knows all the rules and takes care of all the details. You also need somebody in the public relations arm of your organization to step in at some point post-game and think, okay, we need to handle this and what did happen. And if you don't know the rules, you don't have this ongoing dialogue with a reporter who does, because that looks awful and that leaves a mark. And that made a bad situation worse. And that was a PR fail, because
knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendricks?
Yeah, if I'd known that, I didn't know that. I checked the rule. That was why the guys on the bench came out and questioned me about, you know, that Liam was going to be the runner. And I said, yeah, I know. So we didn't know it.
Oh, my gosh. James Fegan from The Athletic is citing chapter and verse of the MLB rule that Tony La Russa acknowledged publicly, not knowing. Nobody on the bench spoke up loudly enough. And you know what was the worst part about this? No, not the worst part, but if a amusing part, probably annoying to a lot of people. You see what happened in the Cubs game last night? That happened twice. The Dodgers and the Cubs both had a situation where the pitcher should have been on second if Tony La Russa was managing these teams, but they didn't have to because the rules allow the preceding batter to take second base in extra innings. And it happened to the Cubs, and then it happened to the Dodgers.
I'll reread that situation. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. And here's the thing. Is that what he said? The problem is that sort of thing is going on, and I agree with you. You know, check Twitter. There was already a conversation going on about that, and just give him a heads up before he goes in. Hey, the rule says this, and you know, be prepared for a question about that. Or the is that what he said moment was Lucas Giolito saying that he had tired and he probably shouldn't have come out for the last inning. And then Tony,
is that what he said?
That's Tony's reaction when he finds that out.
And you know,
someone has to be monitoring that and tell him, Hey, Lucas said this. Now I want to be fair about it. So here's the reality. The reality is they are catching a flight to Kansas City. This is a getaway day. It's a two-game set. You're playing in the morning, and then you're headed to Kansas City. So you're waiting. You've just had extra innings, and you're rushing to get to your flight. So you want to get through it. Doesn't mean you can't do your job. Doesn't mean you don't have to have those sort of safeties in place to protect this guy, so that he knows what's coming in a news conference.
There are a lot of extenuating circumstances, and I think that is fair to point that out. I think what's happened, though, is that when you have a manager who has, in the first 6 weeks of the season, in fairness, I mean, if you're looking at this objectively, like the Sox have to look at this, he's not been nimble in these situations, and he's not shown an ability to think on his feet quickly to the way that, you know, will change perception. And when you're in the PR business, it's all about perception.
Right.
So you've got to almost anticipate this could go bad. This could go bad because of the way this game went. Because, you know, when you look at we haven't even talked about Lourdes Garcia stealing second base.
Well, that was the biggest sin of the whole thing.
So how do you address that? And that's where you might have wanted to huddle or have somebody monitor social media so you know what the toughest question is going to address. And at that point in time, maybe you thought it was going to be Lourdes Garcia stealing and why.
Listen, that made no sense whatsoever. You've got your $54 million closer on third base. You're not going to do a double steal there. Everybody knows you're trying to avoid any kind of altercation at home plate. So why the hell would you send Leury? You got to get the run in. First of all, why is Billy Hamilton batting? You got Zach Collins sitting there.
I know.
And Zach Collins is a left-handed fly ball hitter, and you can get a sacrifice fly even with the pitcher.
Many levels of disappointment.
So making an out at second base for Lurie, who's not exactly, Lurie will just steal another base. If you looked at his career, that's not what he does. And again, you're not worried about, you don't have to check on the closer at third base. It's just a simple play to home, from home to second base. It was so stupid to run into an out there, and then you leave Billy Hamilton to strike out. What are you thinking? You had two players, okay, David? I'm going to go out of my mind here for a second because I've been thinking about nothing else. You had Mendick sitting on the bench,
yeah,
okay, and you had Collins. So let's say you had Abreu at third, or even,
should have been Abreu.
Should have been Abreu at third. Then you bring in Collins to hit for Hamilton, and you could bring in Mendick to run for Abreu.
If you wanted to.
Collins could play first base. Mendick could go out into right, and Lurie could play center. I mean, don't hit the ball to right. I mean, what am I going to tell you? Ozzie said it in the post game. I would put Frank in center field if I had to try to get that win. They hadn't scored a bloody run the whole game. They had a man on third with one out. You got to score a run there.
A run there. That's the key thing, too. All those scenarios that you pointed out are ideas that geared around one thing, and that is scoring the runner from third. The runner on first doesn't matter. That's why him stealing second was such a bad idea. It didn't matter if he was on second base. It doesn't really matter if he scored. If you get a run, theoretically, then you go back out and you protect that lead with your closer, who hopefully isn't tired from running the bases. Because how do you explain that one to Liam Hendricks? I mean, I know it's the National League. I know you're not used to being in the National League, but please, come on.
And here's the thing. Like, if you don't have the closer on third base, that gives you an option of putting in a guy that runs better, and maybe the steal in second would make more sense. It also gives you an option of trying to lay down a bunt. So
yes.
I don't know that you're – I don't know, and you've got Billy Hamilton, right?
Yes.
So wouldn't it be wiser to have Billy Hamilton lay down a bunt? And by the way, stealing second, you got Billy Hamilton. You're not going to get caught in a double play because the guy is – the only reason he's on the team is his speed.
You don't worry about the force out when you got a guy that speedy at the plate, and you took away the bunt when you put your closer on third. That's the problem. It's all a problem, and the explanation – only accentuated and made the bad problem worse because it was Bevington-esque. Terry Bevington-esque.
Yes.
And to hear Tony La Russa try to explain himself and what happened in that inning.
I just had a horrible flashback when you said that. I kept hearing he took the ball in here, and
it was one of those moments
we're
going to be talking about for a very long time. And regardless of how long Tony La Russa's tenure goes with the White Sox, unless it ends gloriously with a World Series title, I suppose, we're going to remember what he said May 5th in explaining, the rule that he didn't know.
Yeah,
is that what he said?
Oh, my God. And the problem is, and you're absolutely right, David, I think the problem is we're not just the only, we're going to remember it. Fans are going to remember it, but the players. There's already been whispers about people not understanding in-game decisions and is Tony losing the plot in these games? And we saw who wrote it? Was it Ken Rosenthal wrote
yes.
it? I'm just saying, these are like some of the top dogs in the cover baseball are writing these stories, national guys. So you know somebody's talking to someone. This is coming out from the clubhouse, and then you have that kind of a moment.
And you have
that kind of a game, and I don't know how the players aren't all whispering to each other.
Well, you wonder what Liam Hendricks is thinking, because he was the guy that when he was going to come into the game, he had to go back to the bullpen. Then he comes into the game, and all of a sudden he's running the bases. We weren't able to hear from him post-game, but you can imagine what's going through his head. It's like, what did I get myself into?
I saw someone on Twitter said he ran the whole route tree trying to figure out if he was in or out. They'll cut behind the Volkswagen. I'm going to put it over the top.
Oh, boy.
Holy cow.
If he had gone, if he went to Ruby last night, she would have detected that he was really ticked off.
Yeah. I think Ruby knew it in her heart. She doesn't even watch baseball. All right. We've got to get into it. There's so much to talk about with it. Again, I've been trying to avoid it, but there's no avoiding it. We're gonna get to it. We've got all the big stories of the day, including a glorious walk-off for Anthony Rizzo. We'll get to everything. We'll bring in our executive producer, Dustin Rose, and we'll do the 5 at 5 next. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Was Tony La Russa's rule book lapse the biggest problem the White Sox had in the 10th inning? Why in the name of Abner Doubleday was Leury Garcia trying to steal second base with men on first and third and Billy Hamilton batting? Was Liam Hendricks supposed to steal home? Were they worried about a double play with Hamilton's speed?
Well, first, I think we need to, I understand what in the name of Abner Doubleday, he is not the inventor of baseball. I think that is really up for question. Never claimed to be in the course of his lifetime. So go look that one up. There were all sorts of problems with the 10th inning, all sorts of really dumb issues that came up. I think the Leury Garcia steal might have been as egregious as anything that happened. You literally ran yourself out of an inning when you had a man on third. The priority had to be score that run. You had to come away with a run out of that inning. And it was an act of madness to think that you were going to get the second run before you got the first one. And I get it. If he's on second, then Tim Anderson comes up, he hits a single, and you got two runs. Aren't you getting a little ahead of yourself? Get the one run. You got guys that can... that can bring the run in, use them. What are you doing with Billy Hamilton batting? I got to tell you, somebody. I don't want to get into it. I don't want to question people's careers and the way they're used in lineups and all that stuff. But there are a couple of guys that Tony seems to have fallen in love with without any reason, without any basis. I don't understand Jake Lamb being on this team. I didn't at the time, and I still don't, and there's been no reason that I would understand it. But to get back to the question, the rule book lapse is the thing we're going to walk away with. It's the thing we're going to talk about. We're going to go to that, and we're going to hear from Tony. I think that trying to steal second might have been the dumbest move of the whole thing. I still don't understand it. It just doesn't make any sense to me in any fashion. And I have no idea what the hell they were doing.
Let's go back to Tony La Russa way back when we were talking about what he was going to be in terms of like a manager and the style and the approach, the analytics. Remember that conversation? Observational analytics. Well, if you're observing what's going on in yesterday's 10th inning or whatever inning it ended up being, you're looking out at the Reds and you're looking at a catcher in Tucker Barnhart who has won 2 gold gloves.
Yeah.
And he's got one of the best arms in baseball. And you've got to know that. You've got to be able to observe that, to anticipate that. And you also have to be able to know that second run doesn't really matter as much as the runner on third crossing the plate. Actually, that runner on third crossing the plate may matter more than who you're going to send to the mound in the 10th bottom of the inning to protect that lead. So why are you doing that? Why are you sacrificing and risking all of that by sending somebody to run? Now, if it was Leury Garcia going on his own, he's got to be reminded that you don't do that in a situation like that. And he needs to be told that the minute he gets to first base. So
he wasn't, though. That was ordered up.
I know. I'm trying to think of this through as it's happening. Like, why in the world would he do that? Is he going on his own? We would find out later he's not. We would find out later that he supported that idea. Again, he just kept on talking, and it kept on getting deeper and deeper. So as we will continue to pick apart the rule book faux pas, not knowing the rule was only part of the situation, and it's only partly Tony La Russa's responsibility, in my mind, to be on top of those things. He needs to have somebody who saves him from himself. The Sox have done a poor job of insulating Tony La Russa. He has been out of the game regardless of what age he is. He could be a first-time manager or a guy who is in the Hall of Fame, but he's been out of the game for 10 years. You have to hire somebody that anticipates all these things, knows all these answers, and is your fact guy, is your logistics guy, is your answer man. They don't have that guy, and they're paying for it dearly right now. And no, Liam Hendricks was not supposed to steal home. I'm not sure Liam Hendricks knew what he was doing or what he was, why he was on third base in the first place. It had to be an amusing, somewhat annoying day for him.
Well, let's start it with the, it's all bad. Like all those things that happened in the 10th inning were bad. He should know the rules. There's no question about that. But at some point, I mean, these pitchers do have to be athletes. They have to be able to play the game of baseball. That's part of playing the game. What if it went beyond seven innings? What if it went into the 12th inning, the 13th inning, the fourth? You have to be able, the guy has to be able to at least run around the bases. I'm not asking the guy to steal, but I think if picking one, it's Billy Hamilton batting. Billy Hamilton batting. Because there were all those options to move guys around. Mully pointed it out in the first segment of the show. Lourie Garcia could have went to center field. You had options. Lamb, you could have had Collins go in and play first base. But Collins was the guy that should have been batting in that situation. So to me, the worst part of a couple of bad things was the fact that Billy Hamilton, who can't hit, but he can field. Okay, he can field, but he can't even put the ball on the bat. That was the biggest error in the 10th inning.
I'm struggling how to answer that one.
Do you wonder what White Sox owner Jerry Reinsdorf thinks as he watches this season unfold? What about Rick Hahn? How do you imagine the players feel about dodgy decisions by their Hall of Fame manager? Will things be worse before they get better?
Well, they could. It's only May 6th, and I think they could. And you have to anticipate that. Look, what Jerry Reinsdorf is thinking right now as he watches this unfold, I don't even know that we would ever really know. He's going to say in whatever conversation he has and whoever he chooses to have it with, when you make a decision that is as controversial as this one and you want to work as badly as he wants this one to work and is not going well, you're going to rationalize. You're going to do whatever you can to try to spin it in a way that makes it sound like it was not as bad as people are making it out to be. Maybe, you know, this is where you blame the messenger a lot in the guys in his position. I don't spend a lot of time wondering what Jerry Reinsdorf is thinking as this unfolds, because I don't know that we're ever going to get a legitimate, authentic, sincere answer. As for Rick Hahn, he's got to be seething, doesn't he? He's got to be looking at this and thinking, I did all that I could to put this roster together that is deep enough to withstand serious injuries to two star-type players, and you can still feel like, as we talked about yesterday before all this happened, the Sox are positioned to absorb these losses because they've got a starting pitching rotation that is one of the best in baseball, they've got one of the best bullpens in baseball, and they have enough offense to win a division. And if you're Rick Hahn and you're thinking, all of this that I have done is in jeopardy because my owner, who we respect and is loyal, is hired a crony. And you've got to feel at some point this is not going well if you're the general manager. The players are going to, you know, at some point in time get tired of this. They know what's going on. We already are hearing whispers, and I think those are just going to get louder. And I would like to say that it's going to get better and this is rock bottom, but I don't know that it is, and I think that even though it's bad from a PR standpoint and all the other, you know, things that we're looking at, the optics are terrible. From a baseball perspective, they're still in a situation where I'm surprised the record is what it is, because it feels like it should be worse.
Yeah, you know, I listen, you said it. We are 29 games into the season. There are 133 more opportunities in front of the White Sox, in front of Tony La Russa. If you believe that there have been three or four games where there have been really weird decisions, just take your three or four and times it by another four, okay? Because it's 133 games. Just do the simple math. This is not going to work. This is not working. This is not something that people can not get at some point. I mean, when's it getting better? It could get worse. Jerry Reinsdorf, I think in his heart, if he was being honest about it, he would have to admit, as he watches these games, he feels the same way that we do. He'll never say it. We'll never get that from him. But I can't imagine the owner of the team, not, you know, the guy that likes to sit back and have a cigar and watch his team play, I can't imagine that he hasn't noticed that this is just not up to snuff. Rick Hahn has got to be out of his mind. He really has to be just, I mean, he's got to be out of his mind because he's got injured players and he's put together this team. And I don't know if anyone's paying attention, but look around, man. Take a look at the teams. You know, who's the great team in baseball? This year, I mean, the Dodgers just got swept by the Cubs. I'm not saying they can't be the best team by the end of the year, but are the Giants real? I mean, is there a team out there that really scares the hell out of you right now? And the Sox, what an opportunity. Unfortunately, they're down to really important pieces and other injuries as well. So I think that's got to break his heart. And then you see this. It's just a cherry on top of a really bad flavored sundae. And I would imagine the players at some point start to decide they're, you know, I'm not listening to that guy. This guy doesn't know what he's doing. That can't be far off.
What I really like about this question is the idea of, do you wonder what Jerry Reinsdorf thinks? And I'm wondering, is Jerry Reinsdorf sitting in that, we'll just assume, a leather chair out in Scottsdale and watching and like grinding on these games like we are? Is he in a group text with other guys that have invested in the White Sox? Does he have a quick line to Kenny Williams? Because I don't think, I'm guessing that he and Rick Hahn aren't like on a text exchange. I'm guessing that they're not like chummy like that. That after what happened with the force down with Tony La Russa being the manager. But, you know, again, I going back to the answer of the first question, I don't think they lost the game because of Tony's inability to understand the rules. But it's being aware of like who's on your bench. And could this day off be a good thing or a bad thing? Could we see a change in the staff? I don't think La Russa, but could we see a sacrificial lamb, not lamb the player? Could there be a change? Could there be a new voice by the time they...
So Miguel Cairo gets fired over what Tony did? Is that the
potentially,
idea?
Potentially, or...
Greg Walker.
Is it Jerry Nairn? You know, is Jerry Nairn, is there somebody...
Have you seen his Kerfus, right? Have you seen the way he writes? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, so...
His lineup card?
You know, Rick Hahn should be more concerned about the fact, and this is also part, they didn't score a run. They didn't score a run.
No.
You don't win many games in baseball.
That's right.
Three.
Okay.
You need three runs to score. This roster, as good as they did the first game against the Reds, they turtled in the second game against the Reds.
Okay, though.
And Keuchel actually had La Russa's back. Like, Keuchel could, so one of these players could have said, you know, son of a biscuit, how in the world does Tony not know the rules? And that didn't happen yesterday. So if all this, if there's truth to these whispers in the clubhouse that Kenny Rosenstein is telling us right now, then, you know, I think that would have happened.
Well, I think Keuchel is a consummate pro. He's not going to do that because he's been around long enough not to do that and know the implications of it. And I think, though, when you talk about the lack of hitting, I get that, and that's the first thing people have said. Well, you know, if they were able to hit, you wouldn't have this problem.
I'm a simpleton, I know.
No, I'm not saying that. I didn't say that. But I think my answer to that suggestion is that in baseball, over the course of the season, you're going to have days like that. That's excusable when you have an offense that's going to struggle against major league pitching. That's excusable. The kind of mistake that Tony La Russa made in acknowledging not knowing the rule falls under the category of inexcusable, and I think that's the difference.
And from a pitching side, I mean, they really wanted to win that game.
I mean, the way they used the bullpen, they were all in. They didn't just genuflect and say, you know,
Dustin,
we'll get out of here with the split. I'm saying they went Kopech.
No, but they had been off for 2 days, and they're off for another one.
I understand that, but I mean, my point is that I felt like the Sox managed the game correctly on the pitching side of things.
You get a man on third, you got to score a bloody run. Right? You can't go 0-3 in 10-inning games because, you keep putting the same pitcher on with a guy behind him, and it's not a good idea. And then that was the first two, and now this. These are bad gaffes. This is ugly. This is not winning ugly. This is losing ugly.
Boy, that's a good question.
For the first time in 61 years, the Cubs won back-to-back games when they were down to their final out in both. How much can a sweep of the defending World Series champion Dodgers, the Dodgers' first defeat since 2019, change the course of the Cubs season?
I think it was huge. I think it was really a big game for the Cubs to follow up that incredible kind of doubleheader sweep and be able to walk out of that series feeling really good about themselves. I'm sure their confidence is sky high. I think that they had a lot of contributions over the course of the last couple of days from young pitchers, right? They won the second game yesterday because of their young pitchers, and they had a young pitcher in Alzolay who pitched great. I thought he was fantastic yesterday. So I think that is something really good moving forward. And I also think that some of the bats are alive. Some of the players that is got to make you confident and make you feel like, hey, why not us and why not now? Everybody knows they're the defending world champions and everyone's picking the Dodgers. They got the top, they got 9 of the top 50 players or 8 of the top 50 players, according to the MLB network. So everyone knows how good they are. They had their best pitchers up there, and guess what? You swept them. So that is a shot across the bow to the rest of the division, the rest of the league, and just follow up on that. Keep it going. Don't stop now.
Anthony Rizzo talked afterward about being up and down and up and down and up and down, and that's what mediocre teams do, is that they will look listless and they can't get out of their own way on some games. And after Sunday's game when they scored 12 runs but couldn't win, you started to wonder what is happening with this team. And then they come back home and they get the sweep. And it does remind you just how good they can be when they get it all together. And the players on that team are proud guys and professionals who have had success against the Dodgers. And they are capable of doing what they did. So, but I don't know that I have a hard time because I have fallen for that trap before. And I have said, okay, the momentum in baseball, you're going to start to play better now. I think what it did is it did remind the Cubs what they're capable of. Can they continue it? Well, I hope that the rotation gets better and starts being the pitching rotation that we saw in the first couple spins through the earlier in the season than what it has been lately, because I think it's all predicated on that, maybe getting healthier and getting more consistency. It was fun to watch, though. You know, Anthony Rizzo, who had that interesting play with he didn't touch first because he wanted to. It was kind of a smart play because he threw to Javi. Javi didn't know what he was doing, didn't want the runner to score. And then he makes amends by having the game-winning hit and then sprinting off into the clubhouse. That was fun. It was a fun win that capped a great series. I didn't realize it had been that long since they had won back-to-back games when they were down to their final out. But that it came against the Dodgers only makes it sweeter and only gives the Cubs, you know, a reason to believe that they're capable of doing more with this group.
It was a fun win. It was okay that it cut basically my typical 5 hours of sleep to about 2 hours and 45 minutes instead of 5. I'll live with it. I'll get by. It's what we do. The worst thing that's coming of this is that they're off today. And this is what I'm worried about, that they're off today. And I'm also worried that when they get back out there on Friday, listen to the game right here on the score, it'll be Zach Davies who will be on the bump. So an off day parlayed with Zach Davies, I can only cross my fingers and cross my toes that the momentum and the good vibes coming off a sweep of the Dodgers can carry through. But that's where the pessimist in me is shining right this moment, that a day off and Zach Davies could ruin all the fun we just had merely 5 or 6 hours ago.
Great question.
If Jake Marisnyk, who homered again last night, and Matt Duffy are in line for larger roles due to their ability to make contact and give the offense a jolt, who will be the players affected the most?
Well, I think that's an interesting question because those two guys are give the Cubs something that they don't have when they do play. And Mariznick is speedy on the bases. He's got some pop in his bat, and he's obviously a plus defender, and you like having him in the lineup. And, you know, Matt Duffy, what did he have, 3 hits last night? And he's a very tough out, has good quality at bats. I like their lineup when those two guys are in it. And I think you have to wonder if you're Ian Happ, when he comes back, where he fits, how he fits. Crafty move by Rossi putting Ian Happ in the on-deck circle, wasn't it? Because they had them thinking that, you know, he was going to hit, and they didn't walk Duffy, and that was smart on his part. So I think that maybe Happ might be out of luck if that is the case. Chris Bryant can play anywhere. Boy, did he make a nice play in center field of all places. He hasn't played third base in 2 weeks, I think. So I think that when everyone gets healthy, I wonder how Happ fits in given what he's hitting. I like the more of I see of Mariznick, the more you want to see of Mariznick. And Duffy's one of those guys, might not get more than a couple starts a week. Maybe that makes sense, and maybe he's going to maximize you're going to get the most out of him by using him in a limited role. So I think he's a role player, Mariznick probably as well. But I'm starting to think that Mariznick may play a larger role than we maybe initially thought.
Well, Ian Happ is the answer to the question. I mean, he's definitely the guy that's going to lose playing time here without question. And, it is just a fact that Chris Bryant can play all over the field. So if you're not hitting Jock Peterson, take a seat, son. If you're not hitting with enough power, Jason Hayward, and he's doing fine. I'm not picking on him. You're a late-inning defensive replacement.
You're picking on him a little.
I'm not. I'm just saying that Chris Bryant is the man for all positions.
He can
play all the outfield positions. And I think that if you're going to have Duffy playing third base, then that's the answer. When Nico comes back, does that mean that David Bote goes to the bench? And I don't know how you will handle
Sophie's
that personally.
Choice.
Exactly, David. The boy or the girl. That is your Sophie's choice. I love it. But I think Ian Happ's got to start playing better. And, I really have a lot of time for him. And I know he's coming on tomorrow with Dan and Layla. And I think he is a wonderful interview. And I really enjoy what he has to say. But, I mean, he's just not hitting. And he's going to have to start.
The guy, my guy, it'd be Jock Peterson.
Yep.
He's the guy.
Ooh,
He's the guy that takes the seat because, again, until there's some metric there, it's just there's the advantage. Jock Peterson, it's just wah, 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 wah. Like, you got to play this guy because there's some advantage. If Mariznick can play center, clearly, plus defender, there's no reason he can't play left, right? I mean, there's no reason.
Brian can play left.
Well, did you not
right,
see
but
the
I mean,
cactus
but my
league?
Point is, you could have. Would you,
you
rather
could.
Have? Would you rather have
Dustin the Cactus League? What the hell's wrong with you?
That's a distant memory. Then trade him to Arizona and let him play in the Cactus League permanently.
But, okay, so you're going to put Mariznick in left, and who's in center then? Bryant?
Well, Bryant, or maybe it's Ian Happ. I'm not done with Ian Happ yet. I don't know that I want Ian Happ up at the top of the lineup, but I think then you would put Mariznick in center. You'd put Bryant in left, and you have Duffy play third. You could bench both guys, but I feel, to answer this question directly, I feel the one guy that right now would take a seat if it was me would be Jock Peterson, except in a metric screaming or a pinch hit opportunity against the right pitcher. But if my point is, if Mariznick can play center and you want to play, I think David Ross really does like Happ and believes in Happ.
Yeah.
I think the organization believes in Happ.
Right.
There's no reason you couldn't play Mariznick in left and keep the Bryant's happy, again, Bryant's happy, by playing young Chris at third base.
You referenced the staying up late like we all did to watch the Cubs. How much did you think it was worth it to see Jock Peterson have the bat flip for the sack fly?
And then the whole body language when he cranked it so foul.
Yeah.
He crushed it. It went and hit the sports corner, whatever that bar is called. I haven't been down to a bar in Wrigleyville and who knows how long. Is it still sports corner right there? He probably landed on the roof at sports corner. But but he's celebrating and Jock. I'm really down on Jock Peterson right now.
What kind of question is that?
A report said Aaron Rodgers would mock Packers GM Brian Gutekunst in group texts with teammates by comparing him with late Bulls executive Jerry Krause. If that's the comparison Rodgers makes in his head, does he think he can get the Packers to fire Gutekunst even though Jordan never got Krause fired? Is that an apt comparison?
Well, poor Jerry Krause, right? I know he's the villain. I know, I watched the documentary and I saw that he's the guy that caused all the problems and the guy that hired Tony La Russa was absolutely had nothing to do with any of it. He was just an overseer. He wasn't hands on. I feel bad that Jerry Krause is remembered that way. I knew Jerry Krause. And I dealt with Jerry Krause, and it wasn't always pleasant. And he did lie to me a couple times, and I called him on it. I had a couple of exchanges with him. But I came out of there thinking highly of the man. I had no problem. You know what the difference is? Jerry Krause oversaw 6 championships. Now, I know Michael did all the heavy lifting and that Rodgers would have to do the heavy lifting if they were going to ever win another title. But that's it's an unfair comparison because Brian – Gutekunst comes up woefully short of what Jerry Krause achieved. And, you know, it's a pity that Krause has turned into this comic book character that people make fun of. But it underscores how unbelievably unhappy Rodgers is and how much he wants out of there. And I don't think he's going to get the GM fired. But I think that he's going to leave there. I think he's not long for Green Bay. He might make up with them for a year because of the money, but after that, he's done.
Disservice to Jerry Krause's memory, not an apt comparison. I understand why he made it, but it's a stereotype that doesn't really apply, and it's a huge compliment to Brian Gutekunst,
yeah,
who has yet to win a championship, and Jerry Krause had 6 championships on his resume and part of his legacy. You can say what you want about him stylistically and all the jokes that were made about him at his expense. They weren't fair, and I don't think he was portrayed fairly necessarily after the fact. But yeah, this just underscores Aaron Rodgers. If he is calling names, his GM names in a group text, it kind of shows you, doesn't it, how petty he has become? Come on now, that's childish, it's juvenile. You're name calling, you're mocking the guy. I get it. It's a different tone with your friends and all those kinds of things. But grow up. Come on, Aaron Rodgers. I am not liking the direction this is headed. Maybe he is going to be an ex-Packer sooner rather than later, but I think the Packers still have a ton of leverage here, and I think that they could move on. They're not going to be the same team, but let's see how this unfolds. It seems like it's a story that changes every news cycle.
Aaron Rodgers and his Green Bay Packer teammates need to leave the Bulls and anyone associated with the Bulls, 6, not 1, not 2, not 3, 6 NBA titles were general managed by whom? Jerry Krause. Aaron Rodgers, you've won as many NFC championship games as who? Rex Grossman. You are 1-4 in NFC, not in Super Bowls, in NFC championship games. So how dare you compare yourself to a general manager that the Packers are even, the Packers aren't even in the cry room. They're in the drive-through church parking lot. I like to go same church, different pew. You know, Michael Jordan sits in the front row. LeBron's in the cry room. Aaron Rodgers is at the drive-through. He's at home watching Mass on television. Keep the Bulls, keep Ryan, the Krause's name out of your mouth, you 1-4 loser in NFC championship games. You got as many as sexy Rexy. Rex is our quarterback, Grossman.
Wow. That was an attack I wasn't expecting.
That's a lot of pent up rage there.
Yeah,
excellent though. That was
I can keep going, but we need to get some callers react to Tony La Russa.
We got to get to the phone lines. 312-644-6767. All right, Sox fans, answer the question. Do you wonder what White Sox owner Jerry Reinsdorf is thinking as he watches this season unfold? Do you believe he is sitting in a chair a la Roger Goodell's chair from the draft? I'm sure Roger threw that thing out, by the way, because of all the people that sat in it.
It would be Bud Selig's chair.
Too many rear ends in that one. Okay, but where you at with what happened yesterday with the White Sox? Where are you at with Tony La Russa? I've tried desperately to be fair about this, and I hate this rush to judgment stuff because it's only, what is it, 29 games in? But guess what? It's 21. It's 29 games in. And just the numbers are adding up pretty ugly here. And a couple of these post games, I mean, it's great that a man is so proud and big that he can apologize and admit it was lousy managing. But really? We don't know the rules? 312-644-6767. What do you do with this problem? Come on. Let us know. 312-644-6767. Mullion on the score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.